Now, Luke wanted to tell a story. And he wanted to tell it in such a way that we would hear it. So he told the story of the good news is Jesus of Nazareth. And then that was absolutely insufficient because he had to tell the story of what difference this life meant. And so we have the Acts of the Apostles, in which Luke says, well, if you thought that was wonderful, let me tell you what it all meant. And so we have the story of the early church. Now, remember that Luke wrote this to Theophilus, the lover of God, some two generations after the life and death and resurrection of Jesus. And so he needs to tell you why it is that there are now Christians not only in Palestine, but Asia Minor, and all the way throughout Europe, covering much of the Roman Empire. And so he tells this fantastic story about the exuberant spirit of God. Now, in order to tell it, he has us all come to Jerusalem, and we hear that the followers of Jesus have been gathered in Jerusalem, waiting. They're gathered together in prayer. And then it comes, the Spirit of God. Now, how in the world to describe the Spirit of God? Now, ancients have been trying to figure out how to describe the Spirit of God, well, for all time. So, Luke takes advantage of many of the various images to sort of give us the idea. First, there is noise. A rumbling, a tremendous noise. And then there is wind, a great and strong wind. And then there are, well, tongues like fire that seem to come and rest on each and every individual. Well, that's pretty good. It even creates enough commotion that the people of Jerusalem realize that something is going on. It's a little bit like an earthquake. It sort of wakes people up. There's something going on in town on this Pentecost day. And then there emerge these, well, not very significant bunch, a bunch of Galileans. They speak with a funny accent, and they don't dress very well, and they emerge into the public square and begin to talk with that funny Galilean accent. Remember. But what is amazing is I'm not from these parts, but I understand what they're saying. And I said, you, well, you are a stranger here in this community. How is it that you understand what they're saying? It is as if they are speaking to each and every one of us, and we comprehend this good news. And then the spokesperson of the group, Rocky, Peter, stands up and begins to talk about how it is that all of the things that we have dreamed about since our youth and all the things that our ancestors dreamed about have now come to be. The Spirit is in our midst. And what does that mean? Well, it means that our sons and daughters shall prophesy. Now, that doesn't mean predict the future, but say how it is that God is present in their lives and is transforming the earth. And we will dream dreams and we will have visions because God is present in a way that has overturned all the things that have scattered us and divided us and now is working to heal the earth and overcome all human brokenness. That's Pentecost. Now, we're sitting here this morning, and Linda has brought a sign of the Spirit. Do you have it with you, Dr. Clever? In one moment, we will have the sign. It's coming. This is anticipation. Aha!
great in the dark.
It's great in the dark. Now, the reason I was delighted when she told me she brought this special sign of the Spirit, because we have just completed a stewardship campaign, and that means that we are now on the way to the next stage in our development, which is the dreaming dreams, seeing visions, and having some sense of where the Spirit is leading us as a community. Now, you may say serving coffee on Memorial Day weekend is an odd way to begin, but it's not bad, because we are going to provide what's needed: cold water, warm hot coffee, a donut, and all the kinds of fuel one needs when standing around waiting for a parade to begin. And we're going to put out all those signs that we had, that we took on the parade last year, that says, well, this has always been a church that dreams dreams and has a vision of a different kind of a world. A place where there was not a place for folk retiring of moderate income. A beautiful place called Redwood. How many of you have been there? Huh? Do any of you live there? Yes? Because there needs to be a place. Now, I need to say this, because this is what is said to me when I'm over there. Very often when you're at the Redwoods, you can take the gorgeous path along the back of the Redwoods and walk along the water. And I have done that on a few occasions, and I can sit on a bench and watch the geese and watch the animals. And I had unrequired, they don't know who I am. I'm just somebody sitting there, say to me as they walk along, this is the best place in the world to live. The best place in the world to live. Why? Because of a vision that this congregation had that there could be a Redwood. Now, I've often speculated that if they had had any idea what they were signing on for, if we read the early history of the Redwoods, they would have said, maybe, but maybe not. But what's wonderful about the Spirit of God, when Peter stood up that morning, he had no idea where the Spirit was going to take him. He just knew he had signed on and was ready to move. And so the Redwoods became a reality. So as we look around in the world we live in today, and we imagine what is possible, where are our dreams and visions for the future? Now, I'm going to ask you to look around and see who's seated near you. And I want you to think about if you could do one thing that would transform this community, make it a place where people would feel that they were able to dream dreams and realize visions, what would it be? This morning, when we were talking in our group about these scriptures, we realized that transformation is something that, well, doesn't always come with the rush of the wind and a vision of fire. Sometimes transformation is something that starts with a tiny flame, just a little bit of encouragement, or someone being present with you to kind of help kindle that flame. So now I'm going to ask you, I'm going to move you around, because the choir talks to the choir too much. So I'm going to ask the choir to disperse, if you would, and go sit among the crowd. The lay people. Move around. Okay. Don't want anyone sitting alone. Thank you. Okay. Now, when you're going to dream dreams or have visions, and maybe you've been to a thin place like Iona, which really helps to stimulate that, but maybe you've just been sitting in front of your computer all week and that may not have inspired much. So I'm going to ask that as you begin to think, if this world were a different place, the world you inhabit, what would it be that would begin to transform your own sense of what it means to be alive and in this place? What's needed? What's missing? What do you long for that isn't here? So I'm going to let you take about a minute to just breathe deep and imagine there's a wind, a fire that has filled you with visions and dreams. What is it in your heart of hearts when you close your eyes at night and you imagine the best of all worlds? What does it look like? What do you hope for? These dreams can be fantastic. They don't have to be grounded in what's possible. Because if we did that, well, there wouldn't be a redwood, because then you would think about all those building permits and all that money raising and all those government forms and all those problems. And that's not how you start when you want a vision. You have to start with, what would it look like? So maybe you have a vision for Mill Valley. Maybe you have a vision for the country. Maybe you have a vision for the world. Maybe you have a vision just in your own life. What could be a blessing? What could be beautiful? What is your vision? So a minute. And then those of you who are feeling inspired, I'm going to ask you to share with those nearby what came as you sat here thinking about what's possible. All right, this is your sermon. You may begin. Have fun. What do you imagine? Thank you. Take another minute to wrap it up. I want to thank all of you for having this conversation, but I hope you will continue it. Now, I want you to think about the fact that Peter, Simon Peter, began his life as a Galilean fisherman along the shores of Galilee. It's very possible he had never been beyond the nearest village because many people traveled never at all. And one day he encountered someone named Jesus from Nazareth who said to him, "Follow me and I will make you fish for people." This same Peter will travel to Jerusalem where we encounter him in the story of Pentecost, but we know ended his life in the imperial city of Rome. I'm sure that if someone had told him that this was going to be the trajectory of his life, he would have denied it vehemently. It was well beyond probably anything he could have imagined. So I think that's the spirit of Pentecost. It takes us well beyond anything we might have imagined to visions of a world different from the one we inhabit. So, a little fun now. Who would like or is willing to share a vision, a dream? Corinne.
I want a healthcare system where safe and your health means no risk of losing your home.
Wonderful. I love that. So a healthy, that people are able to be healthy without risk to everything else that they hold dear.
Yes. Affordable healthcare.
Affordable healthcare. Okay. Vision, dream. Well.
I would add to that, you're talking on this mission level basically about maybe returning a more egalitarian spirit to the community. For instance, more low-cost housing, opportunities for a broader diversity, and that goes along with health care problems. Also have our politicians model a tone of civility.
So you want, and your vision is for an egalitarian spirit in which we really honor one another and we provide housing so everyone has adequate housing, and that we have a civil representation and discourse in our houses of government. That civility would reign.
I'd like to add a bit to that.
Sure.
In that, certainly the politicians, but the people who elect the politicians also need to discuss among themselves what their differences are and do it in a way that they are receptive to listening, actually listening to what other people are saying and considering other points of view besides their own. It's amazing how little of that we have.
How little we listen, because if we were to listen, we might understand the fears and anxieties that lead people to make the decisions they make. Because there's a lot of that today. We're pretty worried and anxious communities, and how do we overcome that unless we can understand what it is like to carry those fears? Ah, you're looking for models. All right. It would be nice. All right. Other visions. Come on. What else? Yes, Sarah.
My name is Michelle Adore.
Okay.
I retire 10 months and 3 weeks from now.
But my dreams keep mushrooming, ballooning. They're
gonna have to tear my list down.
But a dream I have for this church, one of them, is that I would like to write notes that when, for a visitor who has been here, or someone who hasn't been here, for someone who's having a challenge in their life, that I would like to have the time, so I like writing, to do that. So it will be an active dream. I should start making a list.
Well, and there's something wonderful, let's face it, about a written note that comes in an envelope with your name on it, and when you open it up, there's handwriting inside.
And a picture.
And a picture sometimes. I mean, how often most of what comes in the mail today has a window in the envelope? What else? Other visions. Yes, Jordan.
I've often thought that there should be a space where you can go and you're feeling lonely to actually interact with other people. Like, I'm very aware, like, you can go to the coffee shop, but then you're alone sitting at your computer next to this other guy who's alone sitting at your computer. And it's like, it's just like, if you walked into this room, you want to interact with people, you want to communicate, you want to find connection. It doesn't need to be profound, but just, you know, I'm having a slow afternoon, it'd be nice to talk to somebody. I think that should be a
you mean other than a bar?
Well, but seriously, you know, say I'm alone, if I talk to you, am I hitting on you? I mean, just like,
Where the whole point of being there is actually to communicate and get to know one another.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I joke about it being a bar, but what's happened is we don't have very many of those places. And it's true when you do, when you walk into Starbucks or Pete's, everybody's sitting there with their little laptop in front of them, and you don't want to interrupt. Some of the best conversations I have are with the poor person standing behind the counter, having to deal with the people who come in with their eyes glazed, asking what the password is so they can use Wi-Fi. Yeah. Right. A place where we can actually talk. Yes, Linda. This is a duet, folks.
What we talked about is filling the hollow and meeting the hunger that so many people have in our rush world. Where achievement or number or business or how full your calendar is or simply trying to keep a job is also a real pressure. And yet so many of us have hunger and feel hollow.
And I will just add that when you were asking that question about vision and dreams, I didn't know if you were specifically asking about this particular community among us right here in this room and this physical presence of this building in this particular community. But I was adding that in my vision. Took the liberty to it. So I, having lived in Mill Valley for almost 11 years, I loved the time that I lived here. I now live in the city. But I love the time that I lived here. There was, though, this sense of where is the place of Jordan Rays, where you have more intentionality to connect. Mm-hmm. And I still believe, not only in Mill Valley, but across this country, given our technology and the advances of what we would consider advancement, of which there is in technology, there is also the less connectedness. And so I still believe that there are places and spaces that need to be dreamed of and created that allow to address the hunger that I do believe everybody has to be better connected, multi-generational connected, in the sense of the fullness of a community, and also to be filling that hollow space of which every person knows, no matter what place and space of space that they identify, they know by being human, it needs to be nurtured. And so I envisioned a place like that that maybe could be led by a community.
I'm going to
leave the outer part.
Oh, please.
Out the part.
It's about specifically.
Art and the music, absolutely.
And stories and writing and the kind of things in our lives that flow and fit into those interstices of hollowness and hunger.
Mm-hmm. You know, what are the ways in which we're nurtured, which is what you're talking about? And there's so many ways in which we're nurtured that we have eliminated from our lives because of other pressures. So one of the things I think that you mentioned is beauty and how important it is to see things that are beautiful and enjoy them. I'm going to, with Lydia's permission, I'm going to talk a little bit about what Lydia talked about this morning. Is that right? One of the things that Lydia was saying when we were in our group was how much we need a companion along the way. That, and there needs to be a place where you can find a companion who is not going to be judgmental. So many of the places where we work and interact, people are standing in judgment about what we're saying and what we're doing, and we're constantly being evaluated. And there needs to be a place where we can just be who we are, and there's someone who will companion us along the way. And let's face it, sometimes different ones of us are feeling empty and hollow and need the nurturing and companion, someone else to be present. And what she was saying is, we have created a society that is very judgmental. We are constantly being forced to think about whether or not we measure up. And the glory of the Christian idea is that that isn't what this is about. This isn't about measuring up. This is about being present in the Spirit, and we're each present in our own way. And, you know, and sometimes we're up and sometimes we're down, but that doesn't make a difference. It's a matter of being together and loved and appreciated for where you are rather than where somebody thinks you ought to be. Anyone else has a vision to share? Yes, Imogen.
This is not inclusive because the ideas that are coming forward I think are very powerful. But perhaps the vision of the Red Roof is not complete and that we could do more there. You mentioned this, the beauty of the walk along the marsh. We can have a companion, you know, a person who might want to take a walk out in nature. We can have intellectual discussions, and they do have good discussions there at the committee, but we can build on other institutions around us, like the Dominican University and the Greater Theological Union, to nurture some really interesting conversations between people. Mm-hmm. Not so much, you know, listening to the lecturer, but to actually encourage the debate and discussion among people.
Thank you, Imogen, because one of the most marvelous things about the Redwoods, for those of you who spend time there, is the power of the conversations that take place. And one of the things when I was talking to the group I meet with on Thursdays, we were talking about intergenerational conversation, because there is so much to be learned across the generations, and we have a tendency in our lives today to only hang out with people like us, either professionally or by age or in some other way. We've become a very segregated community. Even on the internet, we're segregated. And when we overcome that, that brings on the conversations you're talking about, where we learn from one another, we grow from one another, we get new insights. The class I teach at PSR is interracial, and the youngest members of that class are in their 20s, and the oldest members of the class are in their 50s, and that is a wonderful conversation because we learn from one another, and we would never be thrown together. We come from such different backgrounds, but being there, we learn from one another because we have such different experiences. And so someone says, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Explain that. And that is exactly what Dan was talking about, because that's in those moments when somebody says, you know, I grew up in inner city Detroit, and this is what it was like. It's very different than I grew up in Mill Valley, California. And let me tell you what that was like. And how is it that we can come together and understand one another? So, thank you. I hope that this is the conversation that will continue in this congregation. We've come to the end of a stewardship campaign that was not easy. But now is the time to think about, now, where are we going? It's fine to pay the bills, that's essential, but that isn't why we're here. That is not why we're here. I often ask people, if this church or if this institution, wherever it is that you work or serve, were to cease to exist, who would notice? And if the answer is no one, then probably the purpose for which we, our institutions exist, no longer important, no longer essential. So how is it that we, that our presence here matters, not only in our lives, but in the life of the community? Because that's what Pentecost was all about. Those Galilean peasants could have just gone back home and went back to fishing and gone back to fishing. For some reason, they could not do that. They could not do that. Why not? Because their lives had been completely transformed, and what had been was no longer. And it was now